welcome back to another episode of the Optimized Man podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I just want to let everyone know out there that the Optimized Man online program is up and running. If you are a man who is dealing with insecurities around body image, is not happy with his lifestyle choices and his habits, and you need help to build an exercise routine, you need nutritional advice, and you want to take charge of your life and have some self-respect, then hit me up on Instagram at OptimizedMan. Book a call via the link in my bio or send me a DM and we're going to have a chat and see where you are at. We're going to get you started on the journey to becoming the best, strongest, most healthiest man who has purpose and takes action towards becoming the best version of himself. Now, today's awesome guest is Kenny Morales. Kenny is a jiu-jitsu black belt and he competes regularly in gi and no gi. He has a very interesting story with many experiences, and he also gives some great advice for young men who are looking for positive role models. Check out the podcast on Spotify now, and you can find Kenny at his Instagram page, which is Kenmo_training. Hit him up, say hi, and enjoy the podcast, guys. Have a great day. Peace.
So you're jiu-jitsu black belt. How did you get into jiu-jitsu? Tell me a bit about your journey on that.
Oh man, so it's a long story. So when I was 13, my dad was assaulted with a pipe.
Oh wow.
And that's when I started working out. And then I got into martial arts, and I started out in traditional martial arts and taekwondo. And then when I was a little bit out of high school, yeah, it would have been the year that I graduated, I started going over to my coach's gym in a neighboring town. And I was like, oh my God, I suck at this, man. I'm a black belt, and like, I'm terrible at this different martial art. And then within the next 6 months, I was like, all right, like, fuck taekwondo, fuck other martial arts. I just want to do jiu-jitsu. It's so much fun. As time progressed, I would consider myself like okay going through like white belt and blue belt and purple belt. And then I got my brown belt and I was like, something just clicked.
Okay.
And I started getting more and more serious. I was a little bit older too, I guess, at that point. I started teaching people, which shot me like way up. And I am like the most heavily invested in John Danaher instructionals of anyone you will ever meet. I own literally all of them except for his brand new stuff. And that's the material that I often teach. But, and then in April of 21, I got my black belt, and, I still compete. I competed this weekend. I actually went up against Jacob Couch.
Okay.
Which was, you know, you're familiar with Jacob Couch.
I know that name. I've heard it before.
He's you know, Daisy Fresh?
No.
Okay, so they're Pedigo submission fighting, and they live at their gym, which is an old laundromat. Mm. So if you ever like have flow grappling or something, they had, I don't know if it's still running, but they had a reality show. Okay. And it was just about these like kind of this ragtag group of guys that just, you know, lived at their gym, slept on the mats. I think some have cars now, so they sleep in their cars outside of the gym.
Wow.
They just live a super Spartan jiu-jitsu lifestyle. And he's an up-and-comer. He faced Gordon maybe a year and a half ago.
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty good.
Yeah,
pretty
good. Nice.
I mean, not compared to Gordon, but he fucked me up pretty bad.
Yeah, I'm sure by the sounds of him. I mean, if you've competed against Gordon and then you're living on your gym, on your mats, are you competing much? Like now you're a black belt, or have you always competed?
I've always competed. I'm trying to compete more. So my thing right now is, I just got into doing actual fitness coaching. It's something that I've always wanted to do, but never had the balls to do. It's like when I was like a sophomore in college, I was like looking up statistics and like, oh, like personal trainers make like $30,000 a year. And I said, fuck that. I'm not, you know. And then I was like, you know what? I feel like I'm kind of at a dead end with what I'm doing anyway. I don't enjoy my work. I was doing credit card processing, which gave me a lot of freedom. But after my bills were paid, I was like, I don't care about this at all. And I pretty much lived in semi-retirement and got bored with life. So I said I needed a change. Started working my buddy's gym, and it's been a blast since. But now the next goal is to get more of that cash flow in so that I can start traveling to compete a little bit more. Because once I left my regular job to get into credit card processing, I took like a cut in income, and I haven't really been able to travel nearly as much ever since.
Yeah.
And now that I'm doing something that's actually fun and engaging for me, and just love what I do every day. This is going to be a lot easier for me to build.
For sure. Do you teach jiu-jitsu as well? Like at a gym, like you've got a Wolfpack shirt on, I see there. Like, do you teach?
This is my buddy Jerry's gym. He's down in the Dallas, Texas area.
Okay.
I went there for Nogi Worlds, and I stayed over at his house, and they trained at his gym a little bit while I was over there. So he gave me the shirt and a rash guard and some other.
Nice.
But yeah, my team is Chokyu. We're out here in Valparaiso, Indiana. It's about an hour away from Chicago.
Yeah. You teach there a bit? Like, is that part of your income as well as doing fitness training at the moment, or?
So I don't teach there. I do teach privates at the gym.
Yeah.
So my coach, like, he's in his mid-50s now. He's kind of gone into semi-retirement, so he's moved his program to the Y. So a lot of us do a lot of training outside of there because it kind of limits when we can access the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And so I teach – I have about 5 standing privates a week right now. So that gets me about $200 of my weekly income.
Yep. Nice. And like, how did you find, like, you know, I want to step back a bit. I want to ask you about using jiu-jitsu, or sorry, let's say martial arts in general.
Mm-hmm.
When you're a young boy and your dad got assaulted, like, when you started getting into martial arts, and did you say Aikido you were doing?
Taekwondo.
Taekwondo, sorry. Like, how did that start to change your kind of mentality around the confidence with yourself and being a little bit more, you know, feeling like you can protect yourself if something went down?
That was huge. I think the other thing is that once I started that, and I started working out at the same time, and I kind of expanded pretty quickly for someone that was only 13. Like, I still have stretch marks in my arms from when I was a kid, just growing immediately.
Yeah.
So I got a lot bigger, and then having some martial arts skill, and we were a very heavy sparring school, and we didn't do like the tradition, or we didn't do like the sport Olympic Taekwondo. We still had silly rules, like we couldn't punch each other in the face. But we kicked each other in the face quite a bit.
Yeah.
And that gave me a lot more confidence for sure. But I think there's always like a little bit of like, I don't know. I don't know about that guy. That guy might be able to beat me up. But at this point in my life with jiu-jitsu, I think somewhere around purple belt, I just like, I don't even care anymore, because I'm like, yeah, you know what? I compete against athletes that train every single day. You know, they're lifting, they're doing conditioning, they're on the mats all the time. I don't even have time to put myself into situations.
So yeah, well, you're probably not out in those situations, right? You're not going to be in an environment that will happen, most likely.
No, I train every day.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever had to use any of your skills, you know, in any circumstances?
No. I mean, I had a few scraps here and there with a few different people, but it was never anything serious. It was more like, you know, double leg, mount, calm down.
Yeah.
Never had to get anything serious. I don't know that I ever had to. I've never had to hit anybody once, you know. I know I've thrown a few punches, but I've never had to hit anybody once it was on the ground, because it's pretty easy when someone doesn't know what's happening. And I'm kind of known for tapping people with mount.
Yep.
So I'm a big top pressure guy.
Yep.
So it's at that point they're exhausted and sucking in air, and I'm just like, Are you gonna fight me if I let you up?
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm just gonna stay here for a while then.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
nothing I big though.
Yeah, okay. It's funny because, yeah, I've got mates who used to, you know, when you'd go out, they were a little bit kind of more aggressive, or if someone kind of talked to them and they might get a little bit kind of amped up and, you know, they might get into find themselves in a fight every now and then. But one guy in particular, he ended up getting into MMA and jiu-jitsu. He's probably had about 7 or 8 fights, you know, over his career now. But as soon as he started doing that, he never got into a fight outside of the gym ever again.
No, why would you? Well, because you know what a bad day looks like in the gym. You don't want to have one outside of the gym.
Yeah,
yeah. You get caught by people that shouldn't catch you all the time, and you know, if that happens in a bar or something, you could be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. And there is a difference, right, between a street fight and a fight in the gym in terms of someone could be smaller than you, but they might have a fucking knife in their pocket. So you're trying to avoid them at all situations. But I think that's one of the most powerful things about martial arts, because I did karate when I was like about 11. I did about 2 or 3 years of karate and then stopped. But, you know, the one thing they taught was, you know, like walk around with confidence. And the best thing you can do is obviously walk away or run away from a situation and not be in it. But yeah, I found like, the only real time I've had to use it seriously, and it wasn't that bad either, was like probably a couple of weeks after our son was born. We went back to the hospital for a checkup, and the area that I live in now is kind of, you know, it's known for a little bit of its
little rough around the edges.
Yeah, a little rough around the edges. So you're in the hospital emergency area waiting, and there was a dude there just like a tweaking out, you know, carrying on. And I went outside with my baby in the pram. The pram was on lock, so it couldn't roll away. And then when I went in there, I could see the guy, and I was like, he kind of looks like trouble. And I was waiting for my partner, and next minute, this dude came storming out with another guy. They were just like brawling in a way, like wrestling and trying to grapple. And I just went up behind him, grabbed his legs, kind of did it wasn't really a double leg because he was facing right, but I just grabbed his legs, picked him up, and put him on his stomach, and then sat on top of his hips. And the other dude who he was trying to fight was kind of like holding onto his upper body, and we just held him there until security came. But it's interesting because in those situations, you're like, all of a sudden, you're like, I'm just going to go and do something right now. And
yeah,
you kind of, you know, I didn't think anything bad was going to happen because I knew there was another guy there, there's people around. But it was interesting because you find yourself in those situations way less, I think, when you get into a martial art. But I was talking to another guy, an uncommon young fella who started jiu-jitsu not long ago, and we were talking about the chaos of being comfortable in that chaos or in a fight situation, like doing karate similar to taekwondo, really. Like when I did some fights in karate, like when I was young, you weren't allowed to punch in the face. It was all punching to the chest, the stomach. But then when I, you know, found jiu-jitsu in my like later 20s, and then you're rolling and you're sparring, you're like, you're going 100%, but obviously you're not getting concussed.
Yeah.
I've got no ACL because of jiu-jitsu, but you know, at least you can really get comfortable with someone going 100% on you. And if you ever find yourself in those situations, at least you are familiar in a way that you are familiar with chaos, and you're not kind of blanking out going, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, I think it's that, you know, anytime you have something that's very live, so people sometimes are like, oh, what about like self-defense? I'm like, self-defense class is garbage.
Yeah.
And they're like, what do you mean? Like, but like, I can't do that stuff. I'm like, this is the stuff you need to do because this is the reality. It's like, someone's not going to sit there while you hit them in the balls. Like,
yeah.
Some people you hit them in the balls and they're done. And some people you just pissed them off and now they're going to fuck you up.
Yeah.
You know, so like jiu-jitsu, wrestling, kickboxing, Muay Thai, boxing, MMA, like you don't even have to do it all the time. Just do a little bit. Yeah. You do two classes a week. And in a year, you know, you're so far ahead of everybody else that, you know, that doesn't train. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Cause I was actually, I've been doing some more personal training with my dad. Like he's coming over and we're doing weights together, and he wanted to do a bit of boxing, because I just do boxing with my clients, you know, just pad work. He's like, oh, you know, I kind of want to learn a little bit. And, you know, we had the gloves on. I was just doing some very light sparring. But he's not used to that chaos, but immediately he to try and block a punch, he's kind of like doing the old karate kind of like block punch. I'm like, get your hands back at your face because
just leave them here.
Leave them where you are and just absorb the punches if you can. But it's just that thing, like you're not used to it. But he, in a way, like a lot of men would think like this, is they just think, oh, well, I would just do this. I would just throw a punch and I would block, I would duck. But if you don't have any experience, then you can find yourself in some trouble for sure. But that's what I love about jiu-jitsu is it gives, and those other sports you mentioned, those martial arts, it gives you that practice and it builds confidence, man, so much, particularly you know, as a young man. Like, you know, if you can get into jiu-jitsu at a young age, like, you know, you're going to be a confident person.
And you build things, you know, especially you said in you were in your late 20s when you found jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. So I was, you know, later 20s. I'd followed the UFC and Joe Rogan for years and I was a personal trainer. I just thought, oh, you know what? Well, I don't know if I want to go to an MMA gym because I can get a cheaper membership at a weightlifting gym, you know. And then I got a membership via cleaning the gym. They gave me a free membership for cleaning this MMA gym. And I started, and then I was like, oh, okay, now I see the difference.
Yeah. But it's like as a young man in particular, because we're chaotic, right? Like guys are chaotic as hell, especially when we're young. And, you know, for me, having something that just kind of kept me, you know, I wasn't like a bad, bad kid. I had a mouth on me all through school.
Mm.
Like, I was constantly talking back. I've never been good with authority. Still really am not. But my mouth could have gotten me into a lot of trouble, you know, growing up. But
yeah,
like I said, I was too busy at jiu-jitsu. I was too busy training at the gym. Like, it didn't occur to me that I should be out doing these other things. And it creates like an order out of that chaotic lifestyle that young men in particular tend to lead. And, you know, we always joke because we get all these like young 20s athletic guys and it's like, this is the first thing that goes, right? It's, oh, I got a girlfriend. Jiu-jitsu's done. Oh, I got a new job. I'm tired now. You know, I'm working full time, but it's 9 to 5. It's like, well, class is at 7. Mm-hmm. Like you can do it still, but they're like, but I'm tired. Like, okay. You know, but for the people that stick around, that's a godsend. I mean, I don't know where I'd be without it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, 100%. I've had a few instances based because of my knee injury where I'm like, do I keep doing this? Because I'll ask you about your injuries afterwards. But I got my knee like caught in like, I was trying to pass guard and he was kind of locking down my leg. I was trying to get my leg through. Just my right.
Like a lockdown from half guard or?
Yeah. And it was so much pressure and my knee kind of clicked and I was like, oh no, like stopped. I think I might've just torn my ACL at that point, but the doctor didn't give me a referral to get an MRI. So I kind of tried to rehab myself a little bit, had some time off jiu-jitsu. And then I went back and doing some stand up, you know, as you kind of go for a takedown or you're in the middle of a bit of you know, someone's resisting. I'm trying to get a takedown. I turned, knee collapsed, and that's when I completely ruptured it. Rehabbed it back, got onto ATG a few years back, you know, 3 years ago, and that really helped. Like, I came back rolling and was just, I felt fine, really. Like, I was a bit more conscious of where my body was and my knee, and then a little more careful doing stand up stuff. But then I retweaked it just over 6 months ago. Similar position to how it originally happened, tweaked it and I couldn't straighten it. And I've rehabbed it back and I'm back rolling. I'm even more conscious now, but I was to the point where I was like, man, I've got a 6 month old baby boy. I'm a personal trainer. We'd recently just bought a house. So I'm like, you know, if I keep injuring myself, like how do I continue, you know, trying to make a living and all that. And, you know, I've rehabbed myself and I'm confident now that I'd, kind of my approach to jiu-jitsu has changed, like it has with sports I've done in the past, is maybe now it's time to just be patient and move slow and don't worry about having to go 100% every session.
Mm-hmm.
Be very conscious of the position you're in with your leg. So, you know, as you know, it's probably a continuous journey throughout jiu-jitsu is slow down, tap early when you're in a position that doesn't feel right. So when I find my leg in that position, it's like, let them sweep me or just tap, and then we reset. So, you know, I'm glad I maintained and I stuck with it because, you know, I needed it. I need to do it. If I don't do it, I start to feel like I'm not myself. So, yeah, it's part of my lifestyle.
100%. Yeah. So out of curiosity, so you said, and I asked this specifically, so one of my clients, the reason why he started training with me is because he knew that I was a big ATG fan. I don't have the ATG membership anymore, but I incorporate so much of what I learned throughout my weekly workouts.
Mm.
And he has a partially torn ACL. And of course, they won't operate until it's fully torn.
Mm.
So I was like, well, as long as it's not torn, like, can we make it better?
Yeah.
So he'd be like the guy, and he's a bigger guy too, which does not make it easy, but it's super slow going for him. And he has a hard time. He's like an ex-military guy.
Yeah.
So he doesn't want to relax. Like, he doesn't roll super hard, but he doesn't want to accept that he can't roll at like right now. And so he keeps on retweaking it, which is not really helping the case very much. But just out of curiosity, like, for yours and for your use of ATG, like, how long did it take your knee to start feeling better?
Well, I mean, initially when, like, if I've retweaked it, I'm definitely having some time off jiu-jitsu. You know, it could be like 3 weeks or a month or something. But within that time, you know, being someone who's obviously a trainer into fitness, you're always kind of pushing the limits a little bit. You're not going into the pain too much, but you're like, okay, how does a Patrick step feel? Or how does it feel to, like, at least try and do a little bit of a squat? But incorporating the ATG zero stuff, like, you know, the Patrick steps, the backwards walk, you know, the split squats, and then the stretching and stuff, that has been a godsend, just those exercises, and the carbs and tib raises, of course. But I would give it probably, like, when I'm back rolling, you know, to the point where you're like, okay, I'm going to be careful. I'm not going 100%. I'm just going to lay on my side and just defend, you know. It's been different a few times, but the most recent time, I think I probably had, like, seriously, I probably had 2 months off, you know, no jiu-jitsu, because I had already re-injured it and tweaked it in the past, my situation with my son and everything. I came back slow. I've got some mats in the garage, so I'd have a mate come over. We'd just roll light, and I'd build confidence like that once a week. And then I was ready to go back to the gym after, you know, say 6 months of doing that. So it obviously depends on the individual, but you've got to have that initial time off of probably doing no jiu-jitsu for, you know, a month or so, and just see the range and see the feeling, and then go from there. And then once you're getting those deeper squats and, you know, or your lunges, then, you know your knee's got its mobility back, then you can start. So, you know, it could be very variable, right? But you've got to initially rest it. So I would say anywhere between 3 to 6 months, really. It depends on what happens, you know, but it's an ego battle, right? Just like learning how to tap. It's
a huge ego battle.
What about yourself? How's your injury history with jiu-jitsu in general?
So I've had a few. So in probably 2019, I was running with my coach, and I was posted up on my elbow, and I just felt my shoulder just pop in.
Oh.
And all of my injuries I've never actually had looked at. So I can't say for sure what it was, but I do remember having to sleep for a few months in, like, a Kimura position. Mm. It's like,
on
my belly, like, oh, this is the best way to sleep. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
That wasn't terrible, but it wasn't horribly painful, but it did, at certain times, it started to aggravate my neck a little bit. It was just a very nagging injury, and it lasted about 2 years, and it was a mix primarily between hanging and shoulder cars that really seemed like that's what took me out of that bad, like, place with it. But it did take a long time. It was right before COVID went crazy. I was teaching some closed guard stuff in my buddy's basement. And I went to go hip bump sweep my friend Howie, who is about 280 pounds.
Okay.
And I just hear clunk, 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 clunk.
Oh.
And it was my groin. And I was like, God damn it. And I was like leg assisting, or I was hand assisting my leg in the bed and stuff.
Oh.
That's the one that that's the one that bothers me the most. I found like external rotation hovers help a lot with it. But it doesn't hurt, but I'm aware of it.
Yeah, okay.
And then probably, yeah, it was a little bit more recent. I was trying to butterfly sweep yet another big guy. And I ended up flat on my back. And instead of trying to pull my knees into my chest to make him light, I just kept trying to extend. And he rode my butterfly hook. So I'm going like this.
Oh, yep.
And I had a little pop, which I think was probably a partial LCL tear.
Okay.
And that's when I fell back in love with the ATG system because I liked it at first because I really thought that the split squats were a really great exercise. I love the idea of the strength. I've always been obsessed with the idea of strength and mobility together. So I love that. I was like, that was right in my wheelhouse. I found him specifically because I was looking for a post that Ido Portal did with a split squat. And that's actually how I found Ben Patrick. Sissy squats, Nordics, which I just did a post about today, how badly I suck at Nordics, and I'm trying to make that my year-end goal. You know, but those things I saw a lot of value in. But it was when I actually hurt myself that I was then like, you know what? I've got an hour. I've got a podcast. I'm going to walk backwards for an hour. You know, and then I remember because I had a pretty decent split squat, and then I couldn't do it at all.
Yeah, okay.
And but then I was like, just from doing lots of backwards walking, lots of the Poliquin steps, and then just stepping up onto a chair to do my split squats, and I could do it in higher reps. By the end of that week, I was back on the ground.
Yeah,
with my split squat. And I was like, it was huge. You know, yeah. I put a lot of work into it, and I stay on the edge of pain, right? So it's like, I'm not going to go into it, but I will touch the edge. It's like, I want to be in that like annoying sibling, like, ooh, I'm not touching you area.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, that's how close you got to get sometimes.
Yeah, sure.
But that's one of those things that, you know, I can't say it's going to heal everybody's legs, but that certainly made me a believer in that the method worked pretty well.
Yeah. So do you make sure you train that regularly now without, even if you're injured or not, you make the ATG stuff just part of your program, part of your training?
So split squats and Nordic specifically, along with the sled pushes and pulls, are part of my program in depth 3 times a week.
Yeah, nice.
I do tib raises, I do Poliquin step ups, and I do like the curls with the monkey foot.
Yeah.
Not quite as much. I kind of play with those. I'm not gonna say as needed, but when I just go, ooh, I haven't done that this week, let me go throw that in. just to keep it current. I do some other short range. I'm like a big FRC guy, so I do a lot of the other short range, like liftoffs, and if you're familiar, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that system.
No, sorry, I'm not.
But it's a lot of like, so you'd go into like perhaps a hip flexor stretch position, and then you'd pull your foot up to your butt, and then you'd start contracting, and then you'd let go, and you're gonna hold that foot as high as you can for as long as you can.
Okay.
And so it's like you'll get more than if you just try to lift it off the ground. So if you try to lift it off the ground and you got to here with the lift off, or if you pull it back, right, it's going to fall here.
Yeah.
So you're in this zone that you're very weak in.
Yeah.
So it's a very intense contraction.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And find a lot of value with things like that on the mat.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, cool. So with you said when you started teaching jiu-jitsu around brown belt, your skill level took off. Like, did you just start teaching like a mate who wanted to learn and you did it in your garage and you just taught the basics?
So it's actually a story similar to yours. And I was thinking about it as you were saying that, you know, you had a buddy that would come over and roll light. My buddy Byron, who's like our resident overly flexible, hypermobile guy, had a I don't remember what he tore in his knee, but he was out, and he said, "Can you come over and do jiu-jitsu with me like once a week?"
Yeah.
And so I started doing that, and then my buddy Derek started doing it, and that was kind of the start.
Yeah.
And when I started teaching, and we still call it the Byron rule to this day, which is when you're injured, there's only two kinds of people that you roll with. It's people that you can fully control and people that you can fully trust.
Yeah.
And I think you're a brown belt, right?
Not purple.
Purple belt. Yeah. So like you can control probably most of the people, you know, most people in your gym, but you probably have like a big white belt that you can't trust.
Oh yeah. 100%. I roll with guys who are probably usually just higher skilled, and they're not trying to prove too much these days. You know, I pick and choose a bit more.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Gotta be choosy. It's not rude.
Yeah.
I find a lot of people are like worried that they're coming off as rude. And I don't even worry about anymore. Like for me, especially, I actually got tired of explaining myself at one point, preparing for Nogi Worlds, in 21. And then people would be like, "Oh, like, do you want to roll?" And I'd be like, "Wipe." I'm like, "No, no, no." And then like they'd ask like every class, and I'm like, "You know what? Sure." And then yeah. I would just body lock them to death
and just hold them there.
And you know, like they're getting ready to like crap their pants, and it's like, "Oh, you know what? I don't want to roll with Kenny anymore."
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, and then there were some that came back, and I was like, "You know what? I really respect how dogged you are." I'm like, "All right, like we can roll." Now I actually have a lot of respect for you.
Yeah, nice.
But yeah, I think that's a good rule when you're injured is people that you can trust and people that you can control are the only people you should be rolling with.
Yeah. So the teaching though, it definitely helped you, you know, become more skilled. You found that?
So what it was is that I heavily invested in being a good teacher. So this is where I will say, like, you know, I own, I don't know, $4,000 worth of Danaher material, probably.
Yeah.
Like my BJJ Fanatics library. Every once in a while, I'll give somebody my login information. And they're like, "Holy shit! Like, how much money have you spent?" I'm like, "I don't know.
Yeah,
a lot."
Yeah. Yeah.
But so much of it was I did so much independent study, and to hear my coach like explain belts, right? So he would say like brown belt is like purple belt's where you're specializing, and then brown belt is where you're gonna go back and you're gonna collect all the things that you missed before you get your black belt. And I am probably the black belt in my gym that took that to the extreme.
Yeah, okay.
And I learned everything that I could possibly get my hands on. You know, it's like, I don't really play closed guard, and now I have a closed guard system that I teach people. You know, I was a lasso player, and I don't even know the last time I played lasso, because it's like, nope, now I do collar and sleeve and butterfly and De La Hiva, and it's like, I've got so many more tools. I have a lot more answers. I have a very diverse game at this point.
Yeah, nice.
And it was, yeah, teaching and investing in yourself and investing in your students as their teacher and trying to figure out their problems for them.
Yeah.
And we also worked it a lot as like a lab, like, why is this not working? And I was very blessed that the first two guys that started training with me, they have much higher fight IQs than I do.
Okay.
So they're very good problem solvers, even though they're both white belts when they started with me. They're very good problem solvers. So they could figure out something sometimes that I couldn't see for why something wasn't working, because I am not a natural athlete at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they still do to this day find things. Now I usually have an answer for why something isn't working, but every once in a while I don't. And if I don't, they'll find a way to lab it. They'll figure it out.
Yeah, nice.
And then they tell me, and now I have another answer for my collection. And that helps a lot with all the other people that I do privates with.
Yeah. Yeah, cool.
So it's pretty huge.
Yeah, it's good. I think I should try, and I've got a few mates who are keen to try and do some sessions here and there. So I think it would be a good idea just to start teaching a bit, just to upgrade my own skill set, I think. Yeah, it'd be very interesting to see how I approach it based on my experience of being a personal trainer and instructing exercise, how that carries over to like trying to dissect, you know, positions and submissions. I wanted to ask you, because you said at the start of the conversation that your grandfather was, well, one of your biggest heroes or inspirations.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell me a bit about that? Because I like to talk about men's health, men's mental health, men's, you know, journeys. So I wanted to hear what you had to say about your grandfather.
Sure. So my grandfather, where to start? So my grandparents they lived about 30 minutes away from where I grew up. We spent most of our weekends there when we were younger. When everything happened with my dad, he wasn't really able to do dad things, and not that he was a bad guy, and I don't demonize my father by any means, but he had a lot of missing traits that, you know, he made sure that there was food and a roof over our heads, and he could be very loving, but he could also be very cruel. And we grew up in a house, I usually put it as, we didn't get praised very much by him, but we always knew when we messed up.
Okay.
Now when everything happened with him, he really couldn't do very much. And he was an alcoholic, and I can remember times where I would be one time I was moving him, and it was me and my brother, my oldest brother. We probably moved him 3 times in 1 year. And one time I was moving him, and he was just unconscious on his couch. I'm like, what is, you know, I just remember finding a vodka bottle, and I threw it out, just threw it out by the train tracks, just whipped it across.
Yeah.
But my grandfather, he took care of me and my mom. Like when all that stuff first happened, me and my mom came over, and we were living at their house for a few weeks. And I can remember my grandpa would drive me to school every morning at, you know, a half hour away. And he would drive me to Taekwondo, and he taught me like a lot of things that my father would, you know, be the person that would naturally teach me, right? So he was the one who taught me how to drive.
Yeah.
He was the one who taught me how to shave. When I was going for my first date, like he's the person trying to prepare me for my first date.
Yeah.
So he kind of always played like a dual role in my life. And what's really remarkable about him is that he never looked at it that way. He never considered how big of an effect he was having. He was just doing it. He was just doing what he thought he was supposed to do, which was to take care of his family. And I, you know, I had a speech during their 60th wedding anniversary, and he's like, "Oh, I didn't know you saw it like that."
Yeah,
he had no idea. And even on his deathbed, he didn't think of himself at all. He was just thinking about other people. He's like, "This must be so hard for you guys to watch." Or he and I had a candid moment where it was just the two of us, and you know, he said, "You know, I just hope that I've helped you and your brother." And I said, "Geez, I mean, you couldn't have helped more than you did. Like nobody could possibly help me more than you've helped me. Like you've kind of made sure that I kept my nose clean and made sure that I was being responsible with my life and not screwing it up, which I probably would have done if not for his influence." I was a really irresponsible person. And I said, no, like you've helped me so much.
Yeah.
You know, kept my mom afloat, kept me afloat, kept my brother afloat. You know, it was nice that even there when he was suffering, quite a bit. He didn't think of himself. He was literally just thinking of other people. And he also had like a, I really hate bullshitters.
Yeah.
Like I don't enjoy it at all. And I remember we're sitting there, and we had 3 doctors at the hospital all be like, "Oh, it's probably time." And we're like, we're already there. Like, we know.
Yeah.
Like, you guys need to coordinate better so you can stop delivering us the same message.
Yeah.
But my grandma's like trying to hide it from him. And she's like, he's like, well, what are those doctors talking about? And she goes, oh, they're just, you know, blah, 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 whatever. And I was like, Mom, please find a way to get her out of here. And I was like, hey, yeah, you know what they're talking about, right? Like they're talking about that you're going to die. And he's like, Christ, I know that.
Yeah,
wow. He was very giving, always took care of everybody. That's really what it was. He just took care of everybody and made sure that everybody had, he was a true patriarch, right?
Yeah, that's really good. So was your dad, after he was assaulted, was your dad disabled at all? Or he just was just, it kind of was a bit of a turning point in his life that sent him down a wrong path?
It was both. So my dad was a pretty physically strong guy. He was only probably about 5'6", 5'7". But he was probably about 200 pounds. And I mean, he had a very physical job at the steel mill.
Yeah.
And he had diabetes, and he's an alcoholic, and he'd had, pancreatitis multiple times. Wow. But none of that seemed to overwhelm him until after that. After that, he like really, really shriveled up quite a bit. He was blind in the eye of the side that he got hit on. And then it was like, he couldn't really work. So yeah, he did count as disabled. There were a few different times where we didn't put him in a nursing home. We tried like assisting living places, which he would then, the most notorious one, we moved him to this one, and he was like a my way or the highway person. And he's like, he always has to have his way. And my oldest brother gets him this big TV for his room. And he decides like, oh, well, like, no, I gotta watch the one out there in the common living area at like 4 o'clock in the morning watching like, World War II movies. So it's super loud. So they're starting to complain, but then the thing, he gets kicked out, a few days later because he wants a cigarette, which he's allowed to smoke in the back, and he's smoking it next to his vent.
Oh, no.
So that the smell goes away. And it drifts over to the next room where the woman is on oxygen.
Oh, no.
So, of course, she has a coughing fit, and they're like, he's got to go.
Shit.
It was a nightmare for quite a while there.
Yeah, it's pretty important, that male role model. Like, I talk about it a lot. Just for me personally, it's become more apparent now that I do have a son. I'm very conscious of the way, even though he's very little, though, just the way you talk around him, the way you act, the things you do, because you'll do something once and he'll copy you immediately, or he'll pick it up in no time. It's really amazing watching a little person grow up like that. My father was like, he was a great dad. Like he had his own insecurities around his body image, which kind of rubbed off on me a lot. And then I took them on. He was a heavy drinker and smoker at a young age, but it was always love in the house. He was very, he was an emotional guy too. He always did talk about his feelings a lot. But he was a hard worker, like very physically, like working on the land. Like he was, he worked out a lot too to try and make himself feel better about his body image. So that kind of made me become wanting to get into training, because he gave me some of his insecurities, which became a trouble for me. But then he also showed me part of the solution of the benefits of physically working out. But I can't imagine what it's like, for a young man to grow up without a father. Like, you can see how detrimental it would be. And you're fortunate to have a grandfather who was, just ready to go and just give himself to you guys, which is amazing.
Yeah. And how old did you say your son is?
He's only 14 months, so he's pretty young.
Yeah. And I'm sure that half the stuff, I'm sure you learned the most of how quickly he does something that you do with something that you did not want him to copy.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't do, like things like, if I pat my dog, I got a big Great Dane, he's 65 kilos, so I can give him a good pat, right? But I want my son to pat him gently because he doesn't understand. But then I pat the dog really kind of very rough sometimes in front of my son. And then my son immediately wants to slap the dog, which is not a good thing to teach a young kid when they approach a dog. But it's one of those things, like you become a lot more conscious of your actions and your behaviors when you have children, I think. And it's the same with being a teacher or, you know, what you're into, if it's jiu-jitsu or training, like you have to be an example on the mats and off the mats. So, you know, it's a philosophy to live by is leading by example for sure. Cause I'm sure you influence a lot of people without even knowing it.
Yeah, it was actually kind of trippy. In the last week, I had two people tell me that I was inspiring them to train and go to the gym and just work out more, because I've been posting a lot of content, you know. Yeah. But then I had two other people, and this has happened to me more in the past, but it seems like it's just more and more common. It's like, dude, I can't believe like you go out there and you're going to go compete against someone like Jacob Couch, you know, and he's not even the first famous person I've like gotten beaten up by.
Yeah.
I just keep going. It's like, oh, Adam Wardzinski is going to be in this division. I hope I get to face him. Like, it's fun. And it seems like I've gotten a lot of respect from the people who are like, I can't believe that you're, you know, cause I'm eligible for Master One now. I don't have to compete at adult, but whether it's desperately clinging to my youth, it's such an experience to be able to compete against, you know, the best guys in the world.
Yeah.
You really get to test yourself when you go up against these guys that are just the highest level of grapplers that you're going to fight.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would love to compete against Gordon. And that's mostly because I don't ever want to be the center of his shit talk. because like my biggest fear is, you know, him roasting me online and all of his fans roasting me online for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Because he's.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It sounds like you're doing well, man. Like, I'm sure your jiu-jitsu just goes through the roof even more. Like, obviously competing, it does, but going up against those guys would be a next level.
It was really funny. So we do a lot of the guys that train with me specifically, we love like power half breakdowns from Turtle.
Okay.
And Jacob Couch would do that to me, and I was fighting it, and then he just snuck his hand in and choked me. And I was like, wait a minute. I didn't even realize my neck was exposed there.
Yeah.
It never occurred to me. And so my buddy Derek, I went to go break him down, and, you know, he starts fighting back, and I just slipped my hand in, and I whispered in his ear. I was like, I learned that from Jacob Couch.
Yeah, wow. That's crazy. You don't even know until it happens. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually sent a video to my uncommon life, like the Kenny's uncommon life chat. I won't send you the first match. It's not really worth watching, but I will send you the second one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of body locking, and I got a stalling penalty, and I tried to open up, and then he triangled me.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So have you noticed with your jiu-jitsu, like, over the years, it's like, when do you find yourself becoming, like, unstuck? Because I'm finding at the moment, being, you know, purple belt, I'm, like, trying not to do the same things that I've always done. And it's very hard not to go back to your bread and butter, what you've kind of been good at in the past. And I'm trying to be a little more proactive. And, like, do you have any tips or recommendations on, like, should you just completely let go of your old habits and just try new stuff, and you get risk of getting submitted more? Like, you know, it's a hard battle sometimes.
Well, I think it kind of comes down to what you were saying earlier, like there's the ego battle. But there's something to be said about, you know, the monsters in your, you know, the guy that we consider our best, you know, well, his name is Edwin. So I use my best stuff against Edwin. I don't experiment with him. Mm. Like, he makes me look like a white belt sometimes. Like, and I was just like, well, if I'm trying to work triangles, you know, I'm 5'10", I've got kind of, you know, thicker legs. I have a decent triangle, but it's not a fantastic triangle, you know. Mm. I, I,
I would say the first thing is, what kind of game do you have? Like, what's
Well, I usually tend to, like, because I'm kind of athletic and strong sometimes, I do tend to try and force a scramble, particularly if someone's trying to pass through my guard. I'll try and, like, you know, get the underhook and get to an elbow knee and then try and come up and create some sort of scramble. I might grab the single leg and pull them to the side so I can, you know, get into, you know, so I can start passing their guard. But I find now that people understand my game, they're very quick to sprawl out and stop me, or my head gets exposed quite a lot because I use my head pressure quite a lot to push forward. So I've got to be careful getting choked out now. So, yeah.
So what I would say is, when you go to develop new skills, the best place to develop a new skill is where it touches an old skill. So, you know, for instance, when I got really into leg locks, there's an inside senkaku entrance where it's like you're going for a knee cut, your leg gets stuck, and you back step over.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
So, I was going through a lot of knee cuts at that time, and so that was the most sensible place for me to get a lot of practice in that inside senkaku. I was like, oh, I'm here all the time. It'll be easy for me to get reps, so I can play my normal game up until that point.
Yeah, okay.
And now I'm working on this new skill. So you find those edges to work your new skills.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then the other thing would be, how does a skill, like your passing style, for instance, like what kind of passing do you like?
I like to shove the leg, you know, if I'm in gi, you know, I'm grab the gi, I'll shove and try and, like, I'll push both knees to the side.
Okay.
Like a double leg, head forward and try and flatten their legs out and pass around or come over on top and push their legs kind of between my legs. And now,
save the bunny hop.
Yeah, now that's been happening and guys are really good at the stiff arm and pushing on my head.
Yep.
I'm trying to wrap the arm up to close it down, but a guy the other day is like, man, start using your legs more and lock your legs up and close my, like, and pin my legs to the ground, and then you'll have an arm free to do more work, right? Rather than just trying to constantly push forward. And I'm not using my legs. Like, I should do the more Khabib style pass where you lock the legs up in a triangle on top kind of thing and then start using your arms to pass as well.
Yeah, I would say that the main thing when you look at passing is if you can learn to make it a leg versus leg battle.
Yeah, okay.
As opposed to an arm versus leg battle.
Yeah.
And then understand, like, they're framing on your head.
Yep.
So when you're I'm visualizing what you're doing in my head. And I'll see if I can find a video on, like, the specific type of Toreando position that, like, the death squad uses. But the frame is only strong as if you're pushing into it. Right? So your job becomes to move away from the frame, and then understanding that, you know, he's got that knee that's near you, right? And that knee is really strong if you push directly into it. But if you tried to push his knee away from, like away from his body, his hip flexor is not strong.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's, like, actually a really easy battle to win.
Mm.
So there's certain just, like, understanding, like, the weak points of the leg.
Yeah.
Trying not to just fight into, there's a time for it for sure. You know, usually dealing with frames, just don't go into them.
Yeah.
Start to, like, swim under them, swim around them, move back, and for me, I really like your teammate saying start pinning his legs with your legs, because that is very much how I like to pass. I like to get their legs on the side, pin them with my legs. We call it the pass hole system, because I'll get to mount and they'll start giving me trouble, and I'll just throw my leg over and pin it, and it's like, well, we're in a guard,
yeah,
but, you know, it's just as bad as being in mount.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, interesting. So,
you know, you probably run into a little bit when you're doing that. You probably run into a little bit of, like, they will catch your leg, like your near leg.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you do there?
Well, as I'm trying to pass,
mm-hmm.
I will try and push back on their leg to get my leg through. Like I'll push back with an arm on their leg. It depends if it's my right knee with no ACL, I've got to be careful with what they're doing with it. But otherwise I'll try and apply like shoulder pressure, head pressure into their kind of, you know, into like a cross face, and then, you know, use my other leg to get my leg out. And then you end up in kind of like, you know, a full mount position.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm kind of working that as well. But I think you're right about using your bread and butter, but then starting to find the edges of where you get stuck and then, and try something new. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And scale it, you know. I don't advocate that people get really used to just calling out white belts so that they can to get an easy round.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're working on a new skill, some of those blue belts are tough. You got some young, like 22-year-old competition blue belt.
Yeah, they're hard.
They're tough. So it's like you may not be able to just get it on him. You can get that 6-month white belt though. And
yeah,
you can
yeah.
start getting those reps in on him.
Yeah.
And then you scale it up to that blue belt.
Yeah.
And then after you're good there, now you start to scale it up to your peers.
Yeah, it makes
and
sense.
And then if you're really good there and it becomes part of your bread and butter, now you're trying to use that when you're going into the brown belts and the black belts.